To make you feel safe, a couple people had to get displaced. But right up the block, an unarmed black man got shot. And to keep his job, another brother had to cut off his locks. And you scared I'll force you to be PC? Man, you must be on PCP.
I don't know much, but I know one thing. You gotta preach to the choir so they know what to sing. I don't know much, but I know one thing. You gotta preach to the choir so they know what to sing. I don't know much, but I know one thing. You gotta preach to the choir so they know what to sing. I don't know much, but I know one thing. You gotta preach to the choir.
Racism is on beast mode, and only music soothes the savage, so we gotta preach to the choir so they know what to sing. This is the Preach to the Choir podcast, where we explore how culture affects the racial wealth divide and vice versa. Recorded live, actually, at our cribs, we're sheltering in place, with your host, Tedric Asante Muhammad, Chief of Race, Wealth, and Community at NCRC, Pamela Capallet, CFP, and owner of Brunch and Budget, and Dialect, making sure that the baby keeps from crying. Preach to the Choir is part of the Raise the Wealth Network. Here are your hosts, Pam, Dialect, Diedrich. We're doing stuff.
We're doing stuff. We're sheltering in place, everybody. Oh my gosh.
We're here. We're not going anywhere.
We're not
but
going
we're here
anywhere.
For you.
We're here for you. We're here for you. We're here for you. There's a lot to talk about.
What's been going on? I've just been kind of relaxing. I haven't seen it on the news.
Yeah, just staying at home, working from home, chilling, right? You know.
Yeah, it's a wonderful gig economy world out there.
All right, everybody. It's time to talk about coronavirus and what's going on. This is probably going to be a two-part episode, just putting it out there now, because we want to talk to y'all about what is going on with us and how we see that kind of affecting the rest of our industries personally.
Yeah, well, we want to talk about it from a racial wealth divide perspective. As you guys know, if you have some issues going on right now and you haven't gotten this, Pam and her Brunch and Budget team has put together a document with resources. That's bit.ly/VNBCOVID.
Yes. Yeah. If you need more resources for that, there's plenty of those. We've been putting it together, but we want to do a two-part episode because I think that this should probably be like a 10-part episode.
I was going to say, like, we don't have it's open-ended parts.
This is just the beginning of the conversation. So, Diedrich, what's going on with you?
Well, I think it might be helpful to kind of share with the audience. I mean, obviously, the audience and the large parts of the world are dealing with, you know, the COVID crisis, but, you know, it's much beyond the COVID crisis, right? It's a public health crisis, but it's a public health crisis, which is making many of us shelter in place, those of us who can. For everyone, it's having dramatic effects on the economy. And, you know, we've been talking for years about racial economic inequality, racial wealth inequality. And, you know, there's always that saying, you know, if a white America catches a cold, Black America gets pneumonia. And I think we're starting to see that health-wise, as well as economic-wise. And so, you know, I think it's going to be important for us to discuss how this is affecting the issues we always talk about. And I think maybe interesting this time, we can talk about how it's affecting us and how that's related to race and wealth.
Yeah, I love the thing you're saying about health, because I think, you know, we talk a lot about how stats don't always tell the whole story. And people hear stuff like how Black Americans have significantly lower life expectancy in so many different regions. And you can chalk that up in your head to, I guess, some personal decisions or cultural markers or things like that. But when you have something like this that's hitting everybody and you still see our numbers are worse, you got to wonder what's up.
Yeah.
Lack of access to healthcare, just to start there, is like, I'm thinking about a lot of stuff. I've been having my share of existential crises in these last couple weeks, y'all, just to be honest. And you see other countries who caught this early. You see other countries who even caught this late, but they had nationalized universal healthcare. They had paid sick leave for all their people. It was not an economic decision to have to shelter in place for a lot of people, right? And I think that's one of the big differences that we're seeing in our country. We are technically considered developed, but we don't have that safety net for our people when there's a public health scare like this.
Yeah, well, and also, full disclosure, we haven't done a super deep dive into other countries, marginalized people's effects on what's going on. I'm sure, you know, in the other countries that also have all sorts of oppression too, there's other bad stuff that are going on. If you know about any specific ones, y'all are listening, please share them with us.
Yes, but I think that I know that Dialect and I kind of knew this was going to be bad when first South by Southwest got canceled. And then all of dialects and my in-person gigs got canceled, just like all in a row.
Why don't you explain a little bit? Coachella got canceled.
Uh-huh.
Why don't you explain a little bit, like, your business? And so people kind of understand, like, I mean, I don't know if everyone that listens understands, you know, you all as, you know, small business owners, as people who are out there, you know, doing workshops, what have you, explain how, you know, because I think we talked a little bit before we recorded, you all felt this first. Like, you all were the canary in the coal mine, understanding the economic impact. And also, why don't you locate where you are, too? Because we know it does vary how things have been shutting down in different parts of the country.
Yeah, it's funny because Pam was already talking about the whole canary coal mine thing. And yeah, we always are the ones who end up with the black lungs.
Artists always are.
Yeah, and because it really started with me first, because my artistic gigs ended up falling apart before any of the workshops. It's funny that the educational stuff, I guess they see themselves as more essential things and as less frivolous things. So the creative works are the things that drop off first. But, you know, I'm often humble about the intros. I say everybody else's titles. I don't say a lot about me. I'm a rapper and a playwright and an educator. And I do most of all of that at once, where I make plays that are rap albums and also educational pieces. I had one called The Museum of Dead Words. My latest record, actually, Preach to the Choir, which is the theme song to this show, is one of the songs. It's the lead single from that. It's all on everything, the Spotify's and all that stuff. And it was doing well. I did a self-produced version of it last fall, right before we had the baby. We had stuff buzzing online and good press and all that. So I booked a bunch of gigs, really important gigs, universities that not only were paying me, but would introduce me to other people who would want to book me at their universities. Right now, I'm supposed to be in Denver at the Society for Linguistic Anthropology, where I get actual data scientists and people who know about linguistics and words to dig into my work and tell me what kind of validity it has.
That's not where we are right now.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. We're in Brooklyn in shelter and all that stuff. I'm just saying these like as a couple of gigs. You know, I had some really great stuff that was booked and I was really excited about these gigs. And then when they got canceled, it wasn't like how a lot of work is like, well, we're going to postpone things and we're working it for later. A couple of gigs said that they would try to postpone them for later the year. But because they're the arts, they just said, we're canceling it and we'll see about next year. And that's terrifying to me because next year, that means maybe they have a budget for the arts. Maybe they don't. Maybe their theme has changed. So they're not looking for the thing that I'm doing. Or maybe I just have to compete more with not just last year's crop of people, but this year's as well.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the most frustrating part about the artist community in general, or the things that the artist community really experiences that I don't know if people think about, is that there isn't usually a huge budget for arts in the first place. And so even when artists don't actually want to be competing each other, they're often pitted against each other for the same dollars. Because at the end of the day, people see art as expendable. They see art as the first thing to go because they're like, well, like Dialect was saying, it's not essential. Even though, like, let's be real, what the hell have y'all been doing sheltering in place right now but watching art?
But also they've been watching a lot of the more famous folks who, and they've been like, well, hey, if John Legend or so-and-so or D-Nice can go and do a concert for 8 hours and Debbie Allen can give you all these dance lessons, well, you can do it too. Well, when you have only been paid to choreograph 2 shows in your career and you just had set up a meeting for your next big choreography thing, you don't have enough followers for people to come and look at you doing 8 hours of stuff. That's not a good use of your time.
Well, and doing it for free doesn't feed you.
No, that's right. Like John Legend and them, like they are, and this is the, you know, big thing about, I think, big business versus micro business, right? Mm-hmm. Big business has capital. They can keep going. Their biggest thing is keep their name out there. And 4 months from now, they have enough money to float them to, you know, until they get there, right? But
and good small business.
Well, and they got all the bailouts too.
Well, I haven't gotten there yet. But like,
yeah, not John Legend.
Not John Legend.
Yeah. But even without bailout money, you know, they can keep going. But the micro businesses, the people who are, you know, you do an event and that help pays for that month's rent, right? Or, mm-hmm. you know, you might go a month out. How do you move forward there? And I think, too, you brought up an interesting point as well, is that, you know, so much of, you know, I speak and my speaking events were canceled. So, you know, okay, it doesn't hurt me economically because I get paid an annual sum, right? Whether I speak a lot or I don't, it doesn't matter. But what I do see is that you know, you ride waves, right? So someone sees you at one event and then they might want you at their next event. But if all of a sudden you stop for 6 months, it's not just you lost 6 months of that revenue, you lost the next 6 months of contacts, you know, or a year that, you know, that was going to help put you forward. So, you know, and I think we're hearing more and more on the news. They talked about 10 million people lost their jobs in 2 weeks. And that doesn't generally include most self-employed people. You could theoretically self-employed file for uninsurance benefits. Actually, I'm wondering.
You can now. Yeah, you can now. You can, as a self-employed person, apply now. What were you going to ask?
So I was wondering, like how many you feel in the art field have already taken advantage of that?
Well, here's the trouble, because we've been talking to a lot of our artist friends. One thing I will say is, so one thing that's super frustrating about the stimulus package and all legislation that passes in general is the legislation is passed and there's no infrastructure that's actually put in place to actually implement any of it. So they were like, unemployment benefits, even independent contractors can apply, even self-employed people, whoever, right? But a lot of states, we were just talking about this with some artists last night, is a lot of states do not have any structure in place to receive unemployment applications from independent contractors.
They haven't even updated the text on their website.
Yeah.
The websites are crashing.
We were just talking to someone in Louisiana who basically said there's literally no way to identify yourself as an independent contractor when you're applying for unemployment benefits, even though technically you're allowed to. These 10 million people that applied for unemployment insurance don't represent everyone. They only represent the people who, one, were able to get through on the site, who weren't timed out. We had some friends who said that they tried to do it for like hours at a time and had to memorize the question so they wouldn't get timed out. So the infrastructure is not in place to even be able to handle the huge volume of people that we're getting right now. And some people just give up. And the other thing about unemployment that is super frustrating is the definition of unemployment is that you lost your job recently, right? What about all the people who had been looking for a job for a year or 18 months or 6 months even, and they don't qualify for unemployment right now. And now they're definitely not going to find a job because 10 million other people who were employed are not employed anymore. There's no work out there.
Well, and for the freelancers, especially like creative ones, you're just talking about like arts and stuff. If you were on your second callback for a giant Broadway gig, how do you explain to them that you were probably going to get that?
Right, exactly. How do you even quantify that?
No, I was talking to a neighbor and his son is a really good basketball player. And this is his senior year. And there were some tryouts that were supposed to be happening, you know, still trying to figure out what type of league he was going to go into, even some late college tryouts. Like, how do you make that up? You know what I mean? Like, how do you, like, I doubt they'll do that again in the fall. By the fall, you know, they'll have already put together a team. So there's so many people missing, like, opportunities you can't just get again. But one thing I want to hit on that you were talking about is it's understandable that there's this crisis, right? Like, I think the record before in 1 week unemployment claims was like
695,000.
Okay, about 700,000.
1986. I looked it up and I was 82. Like, 82, excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Dates. All right.
What was 700,000, and then last week we had 6 million unemployment benefits.
Yep.
Clearly, systems couldn't be prepared for that type of onslaught. But I think it speaks to, again, the skeletal framework we have to help people. Like, other countries have social programs that are dealing with the masses of the population, whether it's universal health care, much more greater, universal child care, all of these different things. We just have like something that's meant for a small population that's radically disenfranchised, that just meant to help them for a couple months. So we have just like we've had very little public health infrastructure, we have very little economic infrastructure, which is making this crisis so much worse. Because like you said, I had a friend who was trying to apply for unemployment. And I think because they had such a mass, you only could apply like at the same hour every day, like 7 p.m. or something like that to 8 p.m. or something.
God.
And so she would keep trying to call in and you couldn't get in. Actually, it wasn't 7 p.m. It must have been in the middle of the day, like 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. And she couldn't call in, you know, and the infrastructure wasn't meant to take in these massive amounts of people. So again, she's a person of color, she's an African-American woman. So, you know, I definitely think, you know, we're all seeing there's the COVID crisis and there's the health component. But what's going to be the long-term economic, like, what does recovery look like during a pandemic that we don't think is going to end anytime soon? Like, we might stop having record-level numbers, but even in China, everyone, like in Wuhan or wherever that is, everybody's still wearing masks. They're going out a little bit more, but there's still regulation. How do you have an economic recovery in the midst of a pandemic that is ongoing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is where the existential crisis comes in.
Well, I mean, if we, again, you know, we can look to art. There was a time in Europe where there were weird things happening and people were getting sick. You know, people were getting hairier and bigger and scarier. People were getting more still, like furniture or inanimate objects. And then once the curse was lifted on the beast, then we had a bunch of guillotines chopping off the heads of the rich. And that's how economic recovery happens, right? Beauty and the Beast style.
So I'm assuming what, this is Black Plague into...
No, just the French Revolution after Beauty and the Beast happened, after the whole death thing, right? After we solved the beast and turning into furniture pandemic.
Got you.
Out of the guillotines, and then we had economic recovery. That's right. That's the way it works.
I mean, we're really at this turning point right now where it could go one way or another, right? I think that there's a lot of people.
There's a pro beast contingent, is what you're saying.
Yes, there's a pro beast contingent. Exactly. Is that what we're calling him now? Okay. Yeah. So the thing is that a lot of people have been saying that even just the last 3-4 years, the Trump administration in general was kind of this last gasp at holding on to white supremacy, at holding on to the racial wealth gap in a lot of ways, and that...
Well, and in general, the whole idea that zero-sum capitalism and that zero-sum competition in general is a good thing.
Yeah, and I think we're starting to see now that it's not a good thing, right? We're all screwed except for the very wealthiest people in a situation like this. And the thing that is scary to me is that it could either go the way of we're going to change it, we're going to rebuild, or it could go the way of total dictatorship.
Well,
existential crisis, Diedrich.
or it could keep going the way it's going, which isn't good either. In that, like you say, you know, last gasp of white supremacy, but I also say like this last gasp and the related of neoliberalism. Mm. Like I do find it amazing how Biden still has held on to this idea that we don't need universal health care, right? And that even the CARES Act, right, which is the quote-unquote $2 trillion, some people estimated much more to $6 trillion, mm-hmm. bailout, it still is just kind of like this neoliberal frame of what we is unemployment insurance, right? Instead of just recognizing, you know, it's not unemployment so much, it's that we need to give people money to keep the economy going, and there should be, instead of this one-time $1,200 check, you know, Maxine Waters and Bernie Sanders have put together this thing about $2,000 every month mm-hmm. to help people get through this period. But still, most of the money is still going to the wealthiest corporations, and the money that's even meant for small business, it's the biggest small businesses, and it's still this like trickle-down type thing. Like, we're going to give you, we can't just give you a grant, we're going to call it a loan, and it's forgivable if you do this, that, or another, and all of these types of things. Instead of just a direct infusion, because it goes against people's neoliberal principles just to give money to people to survive during a time of unprecedented crisis.
Yeah, except it's totally fine to do that for corporations. Like,
it's funny, like you talk about like, yo, it's against like neoliberal principles. I'm like, I don't even know. I barely understand what that crew of heads are, and like really don't.
Does it just mean conservative
principles?
Yeah, does it just mean conservative? Is that what neoliberal?
Does neo just mean not in this situation?
Yeah, because they were perfectly fine giving this $4 trillion, right? I think it's $4 trillion to corporations with almost no strings attached, except for like, don't do stock buybacks for 12 months, guys. Good luck.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I think it's good to get into this idea of neoliberal versus liberal. I mean, liberal meaning not like liberal Democrat versus conservative Republican, but liberal meaning that, you know, believe that the free market system, you know, attached to some type of democratic situation is the ideal and America is the ideal. That's kind of, that was the quote unquote liberal frame. And then neoliberal was this idea of much more holding on to market forces is the best way toward democracy, toward life, to helping people.
And that sounds like conservatism.
Yo, government stuff is, yo, whenever things are related to politics, talk about like when I was mentioning my Museum of Dead Words, man, these are the things that really love killing words and their meaning. Because like liberal to me, I still think of like you sprinkle a liberal amount of salt. So I think that, you know, it's going to be spicier and more, well, and more full of variety, right? That's just the general thought when I think of liberal.
Well, in that term of liberal, they're being very liberal, just a sprinkle of support to the average person.
There There you go.
So that's how it's liberal.
Yeah. It's a dash of relief.
Right. A dash, right.
And conservatives are like, no relief, right? And liberals
right,
are like,
no salt.
Oh, I'll give some dash. I'll give a few dashes here and there. And look, everything will be better.
Everything. Well, that's the other frustrating thing, too, is
that chicken in the bag thing.
I don't know. I was going to say something insightful.
I know.
Come on. Now I forgot. No, I think I remember. No, the thing that I was going to say in the midst of all the dashes was it's so interesting to me that the people who are so anti-big government are also the people who are looking for a government bailout as soon as something like this happens. Yes. And I think that's the other thing that's extremely frustrating is there are very few dollars there for small businesses. And I didn't go into, you know, brunch and budget as very much a small business, micro business. There's four full-time employees, including myself. And I can't get a bank to give me a Paycheck Protection Program loan because I made the decision as a small business to support other small businesses and bank at a small community bank, which is not SBA approved. So they don't have the Paycheck Protection Program loans available. So I've been trying to go anywhere else, and literally no one will issue a Paycheck Protection Program loan to non-existing customers.
No, that's right. It's like Mercer Baradaran, one of my favorite economic analysts, she was highlighting, and again, the critique of the neoliberal bailout, that it's we're going to get the big Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, you have to go to a bank to get this government subsidized loan that then can be forgiven instead of just, why does the government either give the loan or just give the grant directly?
Yeah.
It is not doing that. It's making that almost impossible for real micro businesses to take advantage of this.
It's the publisher's clearinghouse. They say they're going to give you all this stuff and there's a rebate if you send in all the stuff, but they're expecting that most people, no, for real.
Yeah.
That's
it's
right.
The same model. They're expecting
that
most
people won't take it. Yeah. No, that's exactly it.
Except that I think I don't think publishing clearhouse, whatever, they know you won't do it. The government really thinks people could do it. I mean, like, I really think like they honestly thought this was a way to get money out. And so clearly,
you know what? I did too. I'm not going to lie. I was like, well, because the other loan program, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program that is administered by the government, is administered directly by the Small Business Administration. Their website was kind of a nightmare. And I was like, oh my gosh, maybe the PPP loan will be much easier to deal with because you go directly to a bank and banks already have infrastructure, right? There are many of them. And they have infrastructure and you're going to have options for where to go. And what we're seeing instead, and my unfortunate optimistic self was wrong, is that basically now they're gatekeepers. We actually also our other small business, Pocket Change, just applied to the Paycheck Protection Program for Wells Fargo. We have been longtime customers there, over 10 years. And basically they told us apply somewhere else because Wells Fargo is targeting to distribute a total of $10 billion to small business with fewer than 50 employees and nonprofit. So basically they're telling us you applied too late, even though you applied literally the day that it opened, and just find somewhere else to go, knowing that no other bank is taking customers who are new.
Well, so
how does Wells Fargo continue to raise the bar for fuckery?
I mean, Bank of America's worse. So,
well, I mean, the thing is, I don't know if it's just a unique Wells Fargo thing, but I think this highlights again the structural problems. That's what I think this COVID-19 thing has done. It's highlighted the structural problems in our economy that we've created, you know, government programs that are heavily bureaucratic and that are difficult to utilize.
Mm-hmm.
We have private systems that can be much more dynamic, but really only designed to be profit-making and serve the wealthiest and the most.
Yes.
So when there's a crisis, there's nothing there that is, you know, readily available to help the masses of people. And so on a positive note, I'm hoping this COVID crisis, which I think, again, we're going to be dealing with aspects of it for at least 6 months, maybe a year.
Longer.
That it'll hopefully shed light on this challenge and maybe really make a demand that some things change. Because we've been recognizing the weaknesses of our situation for over a decade now. I think even since the Great Recession, we've been seeing the weaknesses, the holes. And this, I just want to clarify, this clearly is unprecedented, right? We've never had a time where 10 million people have filed unemployment in 2 weeks. I don't think—
Probably since the Great Depression.
And I don't think even the Great Depression, you had 10 million people apply for 2 weeks, right? Like, because the unemployment rate in the Great Recession was 26% or something like that. And some people are estimating we could go as high as 30%. So we'll see. I don't want to project. But I also, in my lifetime and my mother's lifetime, I don't think there's ever been a time where state borders are not really closed, but people aren't wanted to travel from state to state. So this is an unprecedented crisis. I'm hoping it can bring about some unprecedented positive change, but we will have to see.
Sous vide, that's what it is. If liberals are a dash of salt, then the conservatives are sous vide. That's the chicken in a bag.
I was wondering, I was like, why is Dalek so quiet? What is he doing over there?
He was researching chicken.
He was like, salt. I got more to do with this salt stuff.
I needed to close that loop. Also, man, that was really heavy that you just dropped, everybody. Come on.
Yeah, it was. Oh, my God.
No, it's all right.
Well, and here's the other equally scary part to me is that the Great Depression had a very, if we're going to talk about liberal and progressive, there was a very progressive president in place who really put a lot of policies into place that we still see now, but really took people out of the Great Depression and carried them through it. Like, yeah. I think we all know World War II is the real thing that got us out of the Great Depression. Hopefully you don't have to go there. But the New Deal stuff really gave Americans hope and gave Americans work and gave Americans the idea of having a right to work. And I think that's the kind of stuff that we need to see now.
Yeah, I would like to posit that we got out of the Great Depression through that hope rather than through the war.
Yeah.
I mean, the war created a vehicle for opportunities for jobs.
Right.
But I think the jobs and hope are the things that got us out of the
Depression.
It's important to note that, because when people talk about the Great Depression, they're always like, we got into the Great Depression because people were partying too hard and then they did prohibition and then we got out of it because of the war, because of our limited understanding.
Right. Well, the New Deal, though, I think that, you know, the history books say that World War II took us out of the Great Depression, but the infrastructure that FDR put into place to be able to actually create those jobs that eventually led to job creation in World War II, I think is what really took us out of the Great Depression. And I think that if we don't address the infrastructure right now, the things that were built, the things that need to continue to be built, the Green New Deal that's been put into place, and I think we need to, you know, this is a whole other episode to unpack, but if we don't address that now and we don't start to create infrastructure now, then nothing's going to change or it's just going to get worse.
Well, no, and you bring it up, you know, I think again, the crazy thing is, we're still using that infrastructure from the 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's just like, so can we, you know, finally have a 21st century new infrastructure that really takes care of all of Americans, is racially inclusive for the first time, what have you. But let's, you know, I know we're going to go on and talk more about this in our next episode, but I thought, again, it would be great. We started off with this, highlighting different resources and places that people can go to get assistance in understanding the issue and how government programs affect them. Do you have any recommendations?
Well, us, I guess. I have been, Dalek mentioned at the beginning of the show, the Brunch and Budget team has been putting together a resources document for all the COVID-19 stuff going on. We've been following everything really closely. We also are doing virtual Pay What You Can brunch and budget sessions. So if you have specific financial planning questions, any specific financial advice, it's truly pay what you can. Like, you can put in a dollar and just run through the system just so we can be compliant, right? But we really know now is the time as well that people need to have access to financial advice and to not have money be a barrier. So we really want to help as many people as we can through this process on the personal finance side. And also, we're going to continue to host events. We're going to continue to do virtual workshops. If you go to brunchandbudget.com/events, we're doing a number of events over the next couple weeks that will really speak to what you can do as an individual and also what are the acts of social justice that we can also find within this time. And I think that it's this interesting balance of thinking about the short term and the long term at the same time as we go through this time. And there are going to be days where you feel like shit, and there are going to be days where you're going to feel hope. And I think if we all kind of go through that together and be vulnerable at it together and really reimagine what this is potentially going to look like after we all get out of this, then I think we're all going to be better for it.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's it.
Yeah, no, that's
we'll see y'all next week or something.
I think that's as optimistic a note as we can do in this situation. So that's a great space to end it.
Yeah, well, let's take a break and go to a song. Let's take a break and go to a song here.
Oh, yeah. Why don't we end with a song?
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah. No, oh, this is done. We're done. Oh,
we're we're done, y'all.
Well, yeah, we didn't do the victim and villain thing. We just ran through the whole episode.
We just ran through the whole episode. I hope you didn't miss the song.
I was like, wow, our victim and villain went really long this time. So let's finish off with the song. I was looking for something. You know, it's funny. We started working on this episode as soon as everything started going down. And then, you know, we kept waiting because we wanted to have, you know, we're not the ones to just like report the news. That's not why you're listening to us. You want specific insight. So I kept digging for songs. People kept putting out songs. There are fun, catchy, like catch it kind of dance songs about Corona that are probably
inappropriate.
Right now. You know, they came out with
a catchy Corona song.
No, they're straight up a disco song talking about give it to me, give it to you. And it's like a well-done song, but it was before people realized that this was a really serious thing. So we're going to go to Brooklyn, where we're at, for actually some old homies. Shout out my homie Emo, who built Creative Juices Music. They actually have a great new record, the Breathe Easy unreleased EP by IDE. But I had to go back to 2012 for their artist Critical and his song Quarantine. That's what we're all doing. We're all trying to make our best, do our best. And y'all do your best while you're out there. Like, the least you can do is rest, please. And the most you can do is rest, please.
I was hoping you were going to say that. All right, everybody. Everyone chill. Find some time to rest. And we'll catch y'all next time.
Peace.
You always use that sense of humor of yours to avoid feeling pain. It hasn't always helped, has it?
I think you know the answer to that.
Speed of life got my stress levels kinda high. Neurotic guys zoning out to nostalgic vibes. Smooth sounds heal the soul from anxiety. To numb my nerves, I gotta sacrifice sobriety. I'm caged mentally, the pressure drains energy. Z thoughts weigh heavily tamed by strange melodies. Lord knows I'm having problems and troubles. I gotta maintain and focus through the struggles. Used to run with hooligans with the luck of Lucian. Description of a fool that always seemed to view the future grim. But now I'm grown, kicking youthful expressions. In the booth and I'm venting and getting loose in the session. Recording these scripts right, applaud when we rip mics. Spitting nocturnal verbals in the mornings or midnight. We're rolling deep, bugging out on excursions. While we try to find a way to dodge the traps and diversions. Telling 8 million stories while I'm stuck in this race. Headed for the finish line, but I'm running in place. See, this industry is shady. Most suckers are fake. They're like buddy, 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 all up in your face. See a hustle for papes while I plot with marauders. Should I just sit out or come harder? I'm just hoping this stress don't make me turn gray. Beats rhyme to life, extra nice with the wordplay. Got lyrics to go, so you know the transaction. Deliver ill flows, getting people's hands clapping. A lethal man rapping, some say my mind is jaded. Working every day for this pay, so time is sacred. So don't violate or you'll get violated. Sit back, crack a brew, keep your pupils dilated.
Inhale.
After you light more sets, shouts to everyone coping with a vibe called stress.
You on points off, all the time, crit. You on points off, all the time, crit. You on points off, all the time, crit. Hey, yo, you gotta kick the verse, cause this joint's sick.
The night is on my mind, grind, find a line. I walk, I'd rather rhyme than talk. My mind is caught in rapture, wilding off distractions. Keep it rolling, swerving to act backwards. Verses from abstraction, gotta keep access to the streets, the beats is practice. See me, I seek masses and speak stanzas, bleak canvas. Heal when the needle dances on the wheels of steels and feed answers. The rest abandoned, I say peace to Skef Ansem. Sexy ladies say I'm deaf handsome. Ansem, am one, and I'm catch a tantrum. The goddess bringing it back to the anthems. Like rock, rock, y'all, cause we still on a chase. It's non-stop, y'all, until we finish the race. I diminish stress, belittling the many means. And feeling my best when I contend against my enemies. The Concorde fly across the land on a war tour. We created Cal, my man. On the floor, we score. Just put the ball in my hand. Put your heart in the art and just follow the plan. Let's go, 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 go.